Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, January 9th, 2023. To begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and as usual, we will place the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com. Just sharing a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone who has joined on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you go under reactions, click on the raise hand icon that will raise and lower your virtual hands. If you're able to use these tools, that would be helpful because it helps us in knowing who that somebody's intending to speak, and we can have one speaker at a time. As you all probably have noticed and know from prior, everybody is on mute at this point. So I sincerely appreciate that because unless somebody's speaking, please do keep yourselves on mute because it helps us eliminate any external noise. We do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, when speaking, please state your name first and then your comment. This helps them in doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone call knowing who the speaker is. And it also helps everyone who listens to the meeting recording afterwards knowing who the speakers were at the time. We do have guest speakers today. So welcome to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting. I would just request for you to any guest speakers who have a visual presentation, please describe your slides in detail. That would be very helpful for our AAC members who are blind or have low vision. We also, since these meetings are open to the public, we may also have some members of the public who join the meetings, and some of those members may also have low vision or they may be blind. So this will be very helpful for them. Chair Calabia, with your permission, I can go ahead and read the meeting agenda and then take the AAC roster attendance.
Yes, please do, Anu.
Thank you. So today's meeting agenda is as follows. And actually, I would share my screen for the convenience for everyone who can see the screen. So bear with me for a quick moment. Okay, I believe my screen is visible.
Yes.
And I would start reading the agenda. After I finish reading the agenda, I will go through the roll call of the AAC members. At 4:05, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approval of today's meeting agenda, as well as last month's meeting minutes. We have Paul Bumbry to give us an update about written communication in Metro Rail stations. At 4:25, we have a wonderful team to give us information about e-paper sign. At 5 p.m., Carol Paredo-Lopez will give us an update about the Fairgates prototype. At 5:10, we will discuss the voting results of the 2022 Hettinger Award. At 5:30 p.m., Barbara Millville will share any ombudsman report. At 5:45, we will take any public comments, and the meeting is scheduled to be adjourned at 6 p.m.
Anu, can I make one modification? My two vice chairs, Steve and Sandy, we've been in contact about 10 minutes addition to our meetings, which would allow for members to comment and not relegate them to the public comment period. But for this meeting, I'd like to use the 10 minutes to kind of forecast what our work will involve in the coming calendar year. So with that addition, around, I guess, just after 5 o'clock, we would mention the kind of things we'll be covering in the coming year. And that will kick off a regular 10-minute period in future meetings, allowing for comments from BRS members. Now, if you would move on to the roll call.
Sure, thank you. Okay, I have unshared my screen. I will take the roll call of the committee members, so please confirm your presence. Azar Atura, Darnese Bush, Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Bo Dancy.
Present.
Thank you.
And also, I have a question for you during public comment.
Okay, thank you. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher. Marcy Goldstein. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray.
She had been on.
Yeah, I believe I saw Doris earlier. Okay. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonon. And Philip Weintraub. Okay. That concludes the roster for today's meeting. Chair Calabia, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes, I think the next item is to review the minutes of the December meeting. And as mentioned in our meeting last week, in December, the Bus Rail Subcommittee discussed the upcoming 8,000 series trains with Nahum DeBasey. We also heard about bus route changes and the modified fare case, which will come up again during this meeting. So if people have had the chance to see the draft minutes and are considering approving, please give a motion one way or another.
This is Sandy. I move they be approved.
Second. And this is Patrick.
Yeah. Okay. Having had a motion and a second, can we approve the draft minutes?
Yes.
Approved.
And no objections, minutes are approved. Thank you. Now the next item
approval, Chair Calabria, this is a new approval of the modified amended agenda.
Yes, okay. Do I hear a motion to approve the amended agenda, adding 10 minutes to talk about projects in the coming year?
I'll make that motion, Tina.
A second? Anyone?
Second. Same. Here, Tino.
Okay. Hearing no objections, the agenda is approved. So now we should hear from the first guest, Anu. Is that Phil Bumbry?
Paul Bumbry would be our first guest speaker. So Paul, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Calabria and the entire committee. My name is Paul Bumbry, Superintendent of Rail Infrastructure Support Services. Wanted to come back and give you a brief update on our whiteboard project. I will send you a photograph a little bit later so you can distribute to the entire committee. But what we've been able to find is a 17-inch by 11-inch dry erase board with its own dry erase pen. It could be installed in kiosks either with magnets or a small hook. Okay, I know it may be difficult to see. I'm actually holding it next to him, but in looking for the proper size board, we felt, once again, 17 inches by 11 inches would be sufficient. So I really wanted to get the panel's impression of something like this. I apologize. I do have a photograph as far as I could share my screen if need be, but it's relatively small.
Paul, it is visible, at least to me, and you've described it for people with low vision or members who are blind. It's 11 by 7, did you say?
Yes, sir.
And it's a standard marker for a whiteboard?
Correct. Dry erase.
Yes. is there any way that it can be displayed at the kiosk so that people will see it and know it's available, or will it just be inside the kiosk wherever the operator may want to keep it?
We've purchased a couple of them. Our plan is to see if it can be mounted in one of the windows of the kiosk.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Any questions from members?
The question is, will the eraser be nearby? This is Phil. And the other question is, if you mount it in the window, it has to come off the window so that the passenger can use it to communicate. It has to be a two-way. And how difficult is it to hold? I know what size it is, and you're holding it. So, you know, do you have any problem holding it and writing at the same time?
No, none at all. And we're not talking about a permanent installation in the window. We could just sit it in the window to make sure customers know it's available. When they need to use it, they could just pick it up and go outside of the kiosk.
No, that's great. And can they have the eraser also so that they can, you know, write something and then erase it and write something else?
This particular board actually doesn't need an eraser. You can just take a tissue and wipe away.
Mm. Which will be provided, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, or a towel, you know, something that, you know, is easy to use.
This is Sandy.
Sandy, I apologize. I don't mean to interrupt. This is Anu. Doris had her hand up before you. So Doris, go ahead, and then Sandy.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So what I wanted to say, based on my recent experience with working with several deaf and hard of hearing consumers, is that I think we, the authority, and even the committee,
I'm sorry, Doris, we cannot hear you. It's quite static, and then it goes blank. Doris? I believe Doris might be having some difficulty. Sandy, please go ahead. And then hopefully by then, Doris would not have any issues and we can take her comments again.
Yes, this is Sandy. Perhaps a very short note can be written at the top of the board. You know, do you need to write your question just to make it obvious that that's what this is for?
Okay. Thank you, Sandy, for your suggestion.
Doris? I think we've lost Doris.
This is Anu. She's still connected. Doris, are you able to speak? We cannot hear you if you are speaking. Okay. Seems like there is some glitch. Chair Calabia?
Yes. If Doris can hear us, maybe you can email your question or comment because we cannot hear you at all.
Okay. Steve just raised his hand. Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. As this question doesn't relate to the whiteboard, shall I hold off until other people have a chance to comment specifically on that, or go ahead? I'm sorry about that, Mr. Bunbury. I have a question about the boards, the electronic boards in the stations. One of them shows a map, which of course is very important. It used to be, you know, it used to be paper, and now it's, it's electronic. However, the electronic map is placed in the center of the station. I think normally we see five or six of the screens, and the electronic map being placed in the center, I think many people don't even know it's there. And my suggestion is that you look into putting the maps as the first thing people can see when they come down the escalators. I know me, you know, I've been riding the system for a long time, and if I'm doing a connection, I continue to look for a map. And I think also many people, for mobility reasons or just not knowing the stations, never get to that, you know, that very middle where the map is. So, I know one of the reasons why you're doing this, why WMATA is doing this, and that's trying to get some additional revenue from screens. However, right now, there are many that are just doing public service announcements. And so I think there's a bit of flexibility, and it might be more, you might want to take a look at where the maps are being placed.
I will certainly take that feedback back, sir.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much.
Very welcome.
Any other questions or comments?
Chair Calabia, this is Anu. Besides Doris, I do not see anyone else's hand up.
Well, we'll have to take Doris's comment or question by email. If there are no other comments or questions for Paul Bunbury, let's move on the agenda. Thank you again, Paul. You're very thorough, as usual.
Oh, thank you so much, sir. I appreciate that. I definitely wanted to get the committee's feedback before we went out and started the procurement process and installation process.
Yes.
I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for your thoughtfulness. This is only the second time you've appeared before us, and both times have been very adequate, very satisfying. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda.
Thank you, Paul. Chair Calabia, this is, I know the next topic of discussion is e-paper sign. And I believe we have Alan Rowe, Brian Anderson on the meeting as already. If there are any other members connected, welcome to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting. Alan, go ahead, please.
Certainly. I would just introduce my colleague as well, Denise Watkins, who is also on the line, and she will also participate in the discussion. And I think, as you said, Brian Anderson from WMATA is here as well. I have some visuals to go through, so I'll just bring that up on the screen just now, and hopefully everybody can see that.
We can see your screen, yes.
Okay, so the purpose of this presentation is to talk about an e-paper pilot project that's going to be conducted at Braddock Road Metro Station. I'll try and advance. Brian, if you are there, would you like to talk about the goals?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Brian Anderson. I'm our Director of Innovation and Digital here at Metro. So as Alan said, we want to pilot a new type of digital sign for all of our customers at Braddock Road. It's a 4 to 6 month pilot program where we're going to add a larger size screen to both the inside of the bus shelter as well as the outside of the bus shelter. The goal for this is to deliver more passenger information and then begin to enhance the real-time customer information that we display today at bus stops. If anyone is familiar with the sign today, whether it's the visual version or the audio version, we just show next arrivals, where you'll see throughout this presentation, we want to build upon that success with other key pieces of information for all of our customers. Overall, this helps improve our customer experience and gives us the ability to update passenger information in a faster manner than our older, smaller signs or no sign if we're reliant just on paper. And this is part of our broader plan to improve passenger information for everybody at Metro across all of our modes, access, bus, and rail. And for those who may not be familiar, just a quick sort of summary of e-paper. E-paper is a different style of screen. Many of you may be familiar with the LCD or LED type signs that we have in our station. An LED is similar to our next train signs or PIDs, where the LCD is similar to a television at home, or it's one of the most common forms of screen. But e-paper is similar to a Kindle, where it's black and white. It refreshes slightly different, but it has come back time and time again as a type of sign that is successful in a high transit, high volume environment. I'll give it back to Alan.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Of course.
So we are showing here an image showing the view of a bus shelter. It's looking at it as if you're standing on the bus, you know, looking at the side of the bus shelter. There's a person in a wheelchair sitting inside the shelter, looking at the display screen in front of them. There are two display screens, one facing inside the shelter towards the person in the wheelchair, and the other one is facing externally, which is intended to provide information to people who are on the approach to the bus shelter. We'll go through some more details of these screens a bit further on in the presentation. We can also see a push button, which is also underneath the inside screen a little bit lower down. and we will talk about the functionality of two push buttons, actually, which are in that location. So this is just to give a visual of what we are going to talk about just now. So I mentioned that there are two screens going to be mounted onto each bus shelter. The first screen I'm going to talk about is the exterior screen. So on the slide here, I'm showing on the right-hand side a render showing what type of travel information we can actually display on the screen. So this is intended for people who are on the approach to the bus shelter. The idea here is this would be facing the entrance or exit from the metro rail station. So as people walk out of the metro rail station, they can look at the bus shelters that are in proximity, and they can see a number of different information on the screen. So I'll start at the top of the screen. So I'm looking on the right hand side of my page here, and it tells you stop information with date and time at the top. It tells you what routes are supported by that bus stop, and so that's all the different services that are provided there. And then it also tells you what the next three buses are that are due to arrive. It tells you the bus number, what the destination is, and what time that bus is expected to depart. At the bottom of the screen, there is space for WMATA to push out custom messaging onto the screen as well. And this could be emergency messaging. It could be a number of other information that is desired to push out there, and that could be to provide extra information to passengers. It is also intended to align with the information being provided on in-station displays, so there's consistency between what's happening on the metro rail system with what's happening on the metro bus system from that side. I think I've covered everything there. I'll move on to the next slide. And this is a little bit more information being provided here. This is on the interior screen. So on the slide, I'm showing an image of what could be displayed on the inside display. So this is typically for passengers that are inside the bus shelter. They are closer to the screen typically, and there's some more detailed information. And again, I'll start at the top of that render and work down the page. So we have information on which bus stop, which bus shelter we are actually at, and the current date and time. At the very top, which is shown as, in this case, bus 104, which is just an example we picked here, it's showing that is the next arriving, that's the next bus that's due to depart actually from that bus stop, and the time that it's due to depart. And there's a little Perl diagram below that indicates the stops that bus will actually stop at on its route. And then underneath that, there's a block for future buses. And we've put quite a lot of buses on that. In reality, there are not actually so many buses that serve the Braddock Road station, but this just indicates how that can fill up so that somebody inside the bus shelter waiting can see all of the services that are going to be provided. It's interesting to note in Braddock Road, it's served by both WMATA Metro Bus and also Dash Alexandria. And we do indicate on there who is actually providing the service, whether it's Metro Bus or Dash Alexandria. And they were not showing it on this one just now, but we're also looking to see how to show occupancy information into this as well, so we can see how crowded the bus is going to be that's on approach to the stop. Again, at the bottom of this page, there's scope for additional messaging. Here, just by default, we're showing weather for the next week ahead, but that's quite a flexible panel, and you know, other information that may be of benefit, it can also be displayed there. I mentioned before that there are two push buttons going to be located underneath the interior screen, one to the left-hand side and the other one to the right. So at the bottom of the screen, these indicators just provide some guidance for passengers that there are push buttons underneath the screen. And I will talk about that on another slide here in some more detail. Okay, so these are the two push buttons that I talked about, and this is a render. So on the screen here, what I'm showing is an image which was generated to simulate what the display would look like mounted inside the bus shelter. It's showing the bus shelters that are currently installed at Braddock Road. This is based on their design information, and it's showing it from the perspective of being inside the bus shelter, looking at the display from a slight angle. The important aspects here we're highlighting are the two push buttons. The push button on the left, just underneath the screen, is for text to speech, so that when a passenger presses that, there'll be an audio automated audio voice, to read the contents of the screen to that person. There on the right hand side, there's a language push button, which currently we are going to translate anything that's on the screen into Spanish. So this could in future support other languages, other scripts as well in future. And another key aspect to this is if somebody presses the language button and then presses text to speech, the automated voice will speak in Spanish. It will provide the Spanish translation of the next departing buses from that bus stop. I illustrate here what we actually do when the text-to-speech button is pressed. So on this slide, again, I'm showing a representation of what the inside display would be showing, which is the same element blocks that we had before, but we call it an enhanced display mode. So at the top of the information section, we're still showing the next departing bus, but then below that, we get rid of a lot of the clutter, which was all of the next arrival buses, and just focus on the next three that are going to depart after that first one that's displayed on the top. So it's a much clearer image, and that is what will be converted into the audio description when the text-to-speech button is pressed, or in combination with the Spanish language button, it will do text-to-speech in Spanish. So I gave an example here of what the audio description might say for a typical screen like this, and I've not tried to do the complete transcription here, but the purpose is to say, next buses departing are bus 104 to Pentagon Metro via Cameron Mills Road and Park Fairfax in 1 minute. And so on, but basically to read through the contents of the screen, and so it's accessible from that perspective. And I'll keep moving on. There's as Brian has talked about, there is existing signage information screen inside the bus shelters just now at Braddock Road, and as part of that, there is a text-to-speech system there as well, and I'm going to talk about that. So on this slide, there's a photograph showing the existing push button that's inside the bus shelter that's there just now for people to use to do text-to-speech. And what we will do just now is when the new display screens are installed, that system will be isolated and switched off, and then additional signage will be placed over the existing sign to indicate to passengers who are used to using that button position that they should move somewhere else to find the text-to-speech functionality with the new system. So we do have some open questions. There are still some areas that we're working on just now here, which I'll just run through here just now. So I've gone back here to the view we showed before of the inside screen that's mounted inside the bus shelter. And we are wanting to install some additional signage above the two push buttons to indicate the functionality of these push buttons. The buttons are designed to be accessible. They have got a raised pictogram on them just now with the letter I for information. But to be less ambiguous, we are wanting to put a label above that push button, which will indicate both in raised lettering and braille what the functionality of these two push buttons are. That will sit there. And that's actually the end of the presentation that I have here just now. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Just one question, Alan. You mentioned that the first screen, I think, is a view from inside the bus or outside the bus. Could you go back to the first screen? No, the first screen, the very first screen you showed was a person in a wheelchair. Yes. Now, did you say the person is viewing this from inside the bus?
Yes, that's correct. So this person is inside the bus shelter and is viewing the screen that's mounted onto the side of the bus shelter. So I don't know if you can see my mouse movement here. It's not terribly obvious, but this screen here, which has got a slight bluish color to it, is the inside facing screen, and this screen on the outside is the one facing people who are on the approach to the bus shelter.
And the outside, that is the screen on the left hand side, does that have the same capability of showing or providing different languages or braille or such?
No, it's not. We've only done that on the inside screen just now. So the exterior screen does not have multi-language support or text-to-speech.
Okay. Other members have comments or questions?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. We do have three members who raised their hands. Sandy Newsel, followed by Pat Sheehan, followed by Steve Kaplan, and now Doris has raised her hand. So Sandy, go ahead, and then Pat.
Hi, this is Sandy. So I get a sense of the general overall size of the screen. It looks like it's maybe 2.5 feet high and 1.5 feet wide. But my more important question is the size of the lettering. Is it like an inch high? And I do realize on the screen facing into the bus shelter, it does get larger, which is awesome. And then also a question, when you press the button, do you have to press and hold, or is it just a click? So those are my three questions.
Okay. Thank you for these questions. I'll answer these in reverse order, if that's okay. So when you do not have to press and hold the button either for language or for text to speech. When you press the language button, you press and release, it will change the language for a short period of time, for example, 30 seconds, and then it will automatically revert back to English as the baseline language. And the same with text to speech, you press it once and then it will go into its enhanced display mode and the audio description will continue, you know, for the whole page from that perspective. What we have tried to focus on with the display, and I should say, sorry, that the displays are 42-inch standard aspect displays. So they are quite large displays on each bus shelter. And I think you asked about text height on here. It is different for the approach screen, for the exterior screen, this one here, as this is intended for people who are coming at the screen from a distance, and so we're trying to limit the amount of information on it and just have the most pertinent that could be that can be displayed on the screen from that side. And I think, as you said, on the interior screen, we have a lot more information we're trying to put forward, but with the use of the push button to enhance that, so we can, you know, really take the really core critical information and make the font sizes much larger, so that it's easier to read, and we're not trying to, you know, do the text to speech for a very large volume of information as well, which could also get confusing. I hope I answered the question there. I don't know.
Yes, good answers, and I really like the text to speech aspect. Only going through three buses, or a less lengthy read. That's really good. Actually, can I ask one more question? Is it?
May I just jump in and add, Sandy? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but may I just add, you know, I think part of this, because this is a pilot, I'm sorry if we didn't clearly articulate that up front. You know, there's a series of opportunities to design, redesign, kind of work through what good design for all looks like. So even though, you know, we're talking through going from X number to three, or, you know, whatever, I think that, you know, this is why we're here, because we want to hear some feedback and see what opportunities there are to, you know, try experiment with things before we look at this as, you know, before this comes out of a pilot.
Right. And I was trying to address it in general concepts also. One more thing that popped into my head, is it when you said black and white for the colors, is there going to be an option for it to be a black background with white lettering and then reverse to black lettering on a white background?
Yep, that's another good question. So we say it's black and white, but it's actually four bit, which means that there are 16 grades of gray effectively that go from white into pure.
Not 50? Black.
16. Sorry, four bit. If I've got that right. And so for example, at the top here, we've got white on a black background, and at the bottom, white text on a black background. And, you know, that can be, you know, the screen can be designed very flexibly. You know, the content for the screen can be designed in any which way that is best for a usability perspective for passengers. And as Brian was alluding to there, you know, the purpose of the pilot is really to see what is best, you know, what works best for people to be able to get the information from the screen to make it readable and accessible for everybody. Is that what you meant there?
What I meant was, if on the fly there could be a button that made the majority of the background dark with the majority of the information lighter colors, and then
Yes, simply put, that could be done, definitely. Okay. You know, when we looked at the functionality, and I'm moving through the slides here, so sorry, I've just gone past the one I wanted. You know, with the push button we press to get the text to speech working, that could invert, if you like, the colors and give us white text on a black background, or against a gray background, or whichever. You know, so yes, we have the flexibility to do that.
Excellent. Keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. This is Anu. Pat, you're next.
I'll follow a little bit on Sandy's questions, but Sandy, I think you're doing a better job than I would, since I don't have as much usable vision as you do. But the same question about the screen contrast. I don't know if we're following 508 requirements, but color contrast would have to be 4.5:1 as far as the ratio for screens. So I think one of the things we're looking at is, according to, I think, Sandy, what you were saying is we need to have good contrast ratio between whatever the colors are going to be. So that would make a difference. Also, you've got folks that are colorblind, so your blues and your, what is it, blues and greens or blues and reds, whatever. We have to ensure that. A couple of questions was, is the color designations, are they user selectable? Because that could be kind of messy. You know, once you get on something, get the information, the next person's going to use your color combination. So I'm a little confused about that. And then my main question has more to do with the quality of the voice, of the voice output. Are we looking at something that has like a Siri quality to it, voice quality to it, or is it much sort of more basic, should I say?
Sure. I'll also answer your last question first.
Okay.
Sorry, that's the way my mind works, sorry. But we're using the same text-to-speech engine that's used across the rest of WMATA, which is by Nuance. It's their the same, you know, the same automated voice text-to-speech engine that's used in other parts of the system just now. So with the same voice and the same quality rendering of,
so it's Nuance. Okay, I'm not sure that I've, can you, where would I have heard that? I don't recall it.
Brian, can you speak to that?
It's the voice we use in the rail stations.
Oh, that's a Nuance voice. Okay. Mm-hmm. I use screen readers, and so I'm somewhat voice attentive. I didn't realize that was a Nuance voice. Oh, that's good quality. Okay, that's helpful. And then the other question had to do with color contrast or usable selected colors. The other sure. question, the other thing I might add here would be you used the term audio description. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. Maybe you could explain that to me.
Sure. I probably did use the wrong term there. I really mean text to speech when I say that. So that's right. That's yeah. having the automated voice automatically convert whatever
text
it is
to speech. I get, yeah, speech. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I do some work with audio description as it relates to right. movies, TV, and stuff like that. So quite I different. Love audio description. That's wonderful. Sorry. But I didn't think you were going to be describing the whole page.
No, I misspoke, and I apologize.
No, that's okay. Yeah. Good. I figured you meant text to speech. Yeah,
I okay. did. Yeah. And so the other thing that you asked there was the color contrast. Mm-hmm. Currently, with the pilot, we're really trying to stay with pure black and pure white.
Okay.
Just to get the best contrast just now. There are other shades of gray available. There are no other colors available that we can use, but we're trying to keep it quite simple just now with black on white or white on black at this point.
Yeah, I think that makes really good sense. Just I'm fighting right now with the International Code Commission with light reflective values and all through contrast right. and visual this and that and the other. I hate it. It's just a horrible subject. So yeah. I understand what you're doing.
Yeah. I would also mention something from a technology perspective. As uh-huh. Brian said at the beginning, this is e-paper, which one of the fundamental differences to LCD is this relies mm-hmm. on reflected light. So it acts like paper, and what you see in front of you is working from the light that's reflecting off the screen effectively. So instead of being a glowing screen that's pushing light out mm-hmm. at you that way, like with an LCD, this okay. is using reflected light from that perspective.
Reflected light from where though? From
right. And that's a good question. So if it's in daytime, it will use just the regular daylight that's available right. or the lights inside the shelter. But the right. screen itself also incorporates, I call it a halo of lights around the inside that shines light onto the screen to reflect back at you. But it's still, it's a much sort of gentler way of mm-hmm. dividing text. It's more like reading a page than it is looking at a hard TV screen.
So the last question from me, based on what you just said. So is the text on the screen going to adjust dynamically based on the lighting that you have around you?
Yes. The amount of light that the that's provided by the halo of lights is is automatically adjusted by the ambient light condition.
Well, I'm going to have to get Barbara Millville and Sandy out there to validate all that kind of stuff because I can't do it.
You can put your hand over the sensor and it's see the lights.
I would very much like to see that. That is very impressive. Thank you. Thank you for the explanation. I had no idea. Okay, great.
All right. Thank you, Patrick. This is Zanu. Steve, go ahead, followed by Doris Ray and then Philippa.
Okay, thank you. Is this going to take the place of what's currently there, what's currently there? Is this a supplement to the information in the kiosk right now?
The plan is that this will replace the current display that's inside the bus shelter and the existing text-to-speech push button that's inside the bus shelter. We want to make sure that there's just one source of information.
Okay, thanks. I understand. It's going to be good to have this this pilot to see how it works. The question I think you've got to ask is, what is the purpose of this? What is the purpose of someone looking for information when they go to a kiosk or maybe at a bus stop where there's no kiosk yet? The purpose is to find out when their next bus is coming very quickly, because if they look too long, they may miss the bus that whizzes by. And one of my concerns in the way we do it now is that we include a lot of extraneous information such that people may look for a minute to a minute and a half before they see their next bus. We may have information about holidays, wishing people merry this and merry that, and et cetera, et cetera. The problem is if you have too much information, when people are just looking for one or two very quick pieces of information and then turn around and wait for their next bus, and if it's not coming soon, go down to the cafe for 10 or 15 minutes, this may be a little much. Where this might work is if it supplements the large screen of information that currently exists, perhaps excluding all that extraneous information. So in 5 seconds, people can see when their next bus is, the last stop, and the next bus and the forthcoming bus. I think that's all most people want. This is a beautiful layout, and I think the layout is absolutely perfect. I just question who is going to want to stand there or sit there and look at all this, and whether 90% of the riders, 98% of the riders, all they want to know is 104 Pentagon Metro, 52 minutes. The other information is good, but it's a bit clutter. It's kind of like something, and I'm going to stop because I don't want to talk. It's kind of like what we dealt with a few years ago when an announcement was put on the bus that said the base fare is $2. Well, 90% of the people didn't need it. And it actually raised questions because all of a sudden people started asking, what do you mean by base fare? I'm going here. So it actually was detrimental except for tourists. And so as you're going through the pilot, take a look and see if by laying this out with everything, you're in line with the purpose, which is to tell people when is their next bus, and then they turn around and here it comes, or here it doesn't come. That's why I ask, first of all, is this replacing what's there? Because I notice what most people do. They don't walk into the kiosk and first look up to see what their next bus is. They look from somewhat of a distance. And if they see next bus 15 minutes, they don't go to the bus stop. You're with this way, and your pilot is going to tell you this. With this way, people have to physically walk into the kiosk and spend time in the kiosk when all they want to do is stand at their bus stop and find out when the next one is coming. So you know, take a look at that, because it looks great, but I question whether it, you know, all this information is maybe defeating the purpose of what you want. All right, and that's all I have to say. But the layout is great. Certainly has everything. All most people need is one number. You know what I, if you know what I mean. The rest is interesting, particularly for tourists. But you know, I look for 103 Braddock Metro. That's all I want. 5 minutes. That's all I want to know. And I want it know nice and big, so that everybody can read it without having to get within a foot of a sign. But quickly,
thanks,
congratulations, Steve. Congratulations on the creativity. I think it's an exciting pilot. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think that is a great comment about, in general, about wayfinding, you know, about how people navigate through the whole system from end to end, you know, the whole journey for consistency, for information. And really, you know, as the pilot, it's piloting technology, you know, to see, you know, does the technology deliver? And then also, you know, the kind of learnings from that come into the content and how we create it, how we display it, how we manage it, and exactly these questions you're saying there. You know, what do people need? You know, we're using 90% of the screen where people never look at it. You know, we've got to focus on what people actually want to see or need to see on the bus stop area, and it's to help people who never ride the bus and they need to get there and understand how the system works, you know, understand how the bus network works and how they can get their bus to where they need to get to. So it's to try and, you know, cross a number of bridges in a sense with that. But it's, you know, but these are, I think, great comments. I don't know if I can respond more than that, but to say that's exactly the kind of feedback that we need to hear. I don't know, Brian, if you want to jump in on that one. But that...
Anu, how are we doing on time, Anu?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. We are at 4:58. So for this topic, if we want to remain on time, we have only two more minutes, but we do have two members who have raised their hands also.
Next.
Doris would be next, followed by Philippa.
Trying this again. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I agree with everything that Steve said. I'm a blind person and I have a significant hearing. So I think I'm not exactly clear whether you're expecting that eventually this signage or kiosk or whatever it is going to be in every bus shelter, or whether the design is some kiosk that's going to be in metro stations or what, you know, for buses at that station, I'm not sure. But I think that there are some examples already out on the line that are very important. I agree with Sandy 100%. Black background and white letters, and I don't even think it has to be switched. I think it needs to be, I'm not clear about whether the signage is going to be LCD based, but it looks like some of the kiosks that I have seen are, and they're completely unreadable. So if this is anything like the kiosk that we have at Arlington County Government Center, it is terrible. I can't read it without going into bodily contortions. And I think the message about the message that you're showing, particularly about when the bus is going to arrive, needs to be at an average eye height. And the good signs that I have seen are the ones at Pentagon Station.
Next.
Okay, I'm not sure if Doris ended her comments, but we cannot hear you, Doris, just so you know. Next would be Philippa. Philippa.
Good evening, everyone. This sounds like a really great project. I'm pleased about it. But like Sandy and Pat, and I guess Doris, but my question is more around color and contrast. So I got the answers you gave them, but what I'm also interested in is seeing this under bright sunlight. I know if sunlight comes into my home too strong, I can't see my television, and heaven help me if I'm outside trying to look at something on my cell phone. So I would just be curious how it would work under bright sunlight, because that wipes out for a lot of people. But otherwise, it sounds really great. I'm excited about it. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll be quick here. I realize we're short of time, and that's part of the technology pilot as well. Just to answer that exact question, you know, how does this respond in bright incident sunlight coming on? In theory, the e-paper technology should be good because it relies on reflective light, but we'll see when it's out there. And I think that's the key thing, that we can try this in the labs and experiment with it, but we need it out there on the bus shelters to actually work with it and see how it responds in different conditions.
Oh, and right quick, I just wanted to say thank you, Pat, for any work you do on audio description. I love that feature.
And thank you, Alan.
But Chair Kalabia, this is Zenu's. Sorry for interrupting. We do have Azar as well. She just raised her hand. If we could just take a quick moment to take her comments.
Hi, did you mention me? My sound is really bad.
Yes.
Did you mention me?
Azar? Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with the signage. And it kills me when I go to the Pentagon and I look for the number 42 bus and it says it's coming in 54 minutes and 2 minutes later it comes. So, but that's not my problem. I'm a cancer survivor. I have a benign spot on my lung, and it just kills me to go into the station and smell marijuana smoke on the platform, in the trains, in the buses, and when I'm going up the escalator, somebody lights up in front of me and I can't go anywhere but up and breathe that. The other thing is that I have to get out of the way for the fare gate jumper. So I think Metro needs to do a better job of that. And if there were just a way for me to take a bus, one bus, and go into DC, I wish you guys would reinstate the 16X. That was a rush hour godsend.
Okay, thank you, Azar. The team has questions or take feedback regarding the e-pilot, but we will surely make a note of your comments.
Thank you. Item.
Thank you, everyone, for your time and discussion around this topic. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, Juan and Alan. Thank you so much for coming and sharing the information and taking feedback from the committee. Chair Kalabia, the next topic is Fairgate's prototype, and Carol would provide us with an update. Carol, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Carol Lopez. Thank you, Brian and Alan, for a great presentation for the e-paper. And,
Carol, if you would unmute yourself, please. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, so I wanted to just let you know that the Fairgate prototype is going to be ready to be tested by the advisory committee on January 18th at 11 in the morning at Fort Totten Station. And if the members of the advisory committee would be able to meet us over there. We're going to be there from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. And just to test the doors opening and how they close, etc., before it's open to the public on January 23rd. And these prototype gates are going to be open to the public from the end of this month until September of this year. So, but before we open it, I really would feel much more comfortable if the advisory committee would review the gates and test them. We have tested them somewhat, given feedback. We're going to retest them again to make sure that they close at the right rate, etc. But per all the requirements and for ADA compliance. However, we really do need to go above and beyond in everything we do. So if you could help us, it would be wonderful.
Could you mention the date again?
Wednesday, January 18th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Carol, you saw the NBC4 piece that I circulated to the committee about fare evasion. Does it deal with that kind of problem that was televised in actual fact regarding fare evaders?
All I wanted to share is that on how the gates operate. I think that the advisory committee could go there, look at it, and see if it does deal with all those issues. I don't think that any of the gates are going to stop people who really want to evade the system in such crafty manners. But this is what WMATA has developed as an alternative, and we would need your feedback based on that.
Some of the people who were photographed very simply just walk between the orange gates. Is there some way that people can be shown whether that's possible? That was the easiest way that appeared to me that fare evaders did it. Others, of course, did these huge leaps over, and I'm not sure that we can.
These new fare gates samples were presented to you in another meeting prior to this, and they look like saloon gates, or there's just one gate leaf and it swings. They're different than the current gates that we have in our system. And one of the issues with those is that if someone keeps the gate open, other people can go behind them. But that's why we would like you to see it. And that's why WMATA has created a test so we can see how successful a gate of this nature would be to deter fare evasion.
Any comments from, I see Sandy's hand is up. Sandy? Yes.
Hi, this is Sandy. So yes, I'll be there. I will on the 18th to test it. You mentioned in that presentation a few weeks ago that there were two types of fare gates that were going to be tested and that another type of fare gate was going to be put in at Eisenhower. Is that still the case?
At this time, we're going to be working with just the ones we're presenting at Fort Totten.
Okay. Fine. I'll see you then.
That would be wonderful. Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you. Bill?
I'd just like to remind everyone, when they look at them, don't worry about fare evasion. Worry about accessibility for people with mobility devices vision and hearing problems. As far as the fair evasion goes, WMATA can deal with that. But we need to make sure that people with disabilities, people with baby carriages, can still get through.
Absolutely, Phil. I think our focus should be for the safety of how a person with a disability uses that gate, whether it's useful to them. We of course, our office looks at all that, but we also need your help on reviewing such efforts so that we can provide, if something is not working properly that we have missed, then we will catch it in this way.
Any other?
Chair Calabia, this is Anu. I do not see any other hands up at this point.
Okay. If there's no other questions or comments, then can we move to the next item?
Sure. Anu? Thank you, Carol. And the next topic for today's meeting agenda is the 2022 Hettinger Award, the voting results. Did you want to make any comments, Chair Calabia?
We proposed at the beginning of this meeting that a few minutes be allotted to reviewing some of the things that we will be looking at in calendar year 2023.
Sure, go ahead.
Over the course of the past couple of years, we've been interested in the 8000 series cranes, and Nahom came at the last meeting, and I expect that we'll be focusing on that because we spent a lot of time up to December 2019 on recommendations regarding that series. We also, especially with with Pat, have talked about campaigning to educate bikers, or at least the bike associations, about the problems that people with disabilities and the elderly face when roads are designed for bikers and provide, unfortunately, some problem for people with disabilities and the elderly to get across those bike lanes. We also have been talking about improving the lighting in the metro stations. Barbara Millville has been helping in this regard for years, even before I ever joined the advisory committee. And it's something that doesn't go away. So let's hope that Barbara and Sandy and Doris and others who have been concerned about this will continue on that effort. And then, although she's not here today, Denise at the last meeting pressed us to do something about fixing bus stops. We heard today about how bus shelters can be provided with new ways of informing bus riders when the next bus is coming, but there are some bus stops which aren't even shelters. And so we have to talk to the different jurisdictions about what they can do about that. Steve and Sandy and I have discussed some of these things. Steve and Sandy, do you have additional thoughts about this subject? And after that, Phil has his hand up. Steve? Sandy?
Yeah, this is Sandy. So I think it's admirable to guide bicycle services and bikers, but I think we need to restrict our thoughts to how it impacts metro
people bringing bicycles on Metro, bicycle lanes impacting access to bus stops. I don't think we should be tackling the whole issue of bicycle riding throughout DC, but I think if we focus on bicycles as they impact Metro, bus, rail, and Metro access, that's an admirable goal.
Well, Patrick, if you're still on, Patrick has thought about these problems, especially in regards to Montgomery County.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Tino. Sandy, I agree with you with respect to bicycles in general, but I would say that the area of focus that we're looking at has to do with floating bus stops. I don't know if you've had the joy of trying to navigate to a floating bus stop, right, and how they are constructed and how sort of bikes get free reign during the, zipping down these bicycle paths, and being able to put in at least some structures like APSs and all. And we're doing some of that work in Montgomery County. And I think that work is also being looked at in DC, so that the way a floating bus stop is constructed, it has the same accessibility features in it in Maryland as it does in DC and Virginia. So what we're very quickly looking at with that is effective communication. One, to let you know, oh, by the way, we took the bus stop off the side of the street and we moved it out into the lane, into a lane of traffic. And that's number one. And two, that when you go to cross the 8 feet or so to get to the floating bus stop, that you have a APS or something like an accessible pedestrian signal that will indicate to you that there is a floating bus stop ahead and that it is, you have the ability to cross that 8 feet or 10 feet to get to that floating bus stop. That's the kind of thing that we're trying to get universal design, so that DC doesn't do it one way, Virginia do it another way, Maryland do it another way. And even within Montgomery County, when we've been working at this for like five years, we've had about five or six different constructions of this stuff because they didn't think of accessibility and particularly blind passengers. So I think when Tino's talking about bicycles, specifically, we're talking about bus stops, and specifically it's the floating bus stops. And then the other thing, Tino, I would just say, since I have a minute, I very much appreciate having the jurisdictions to come in and give us an update as to what they are doing with respect to bus stops in their jurisdictions. I think that that's important. We've got money coming in through the infrastructure programs. How is it going to be used? Particularly places like Prince George's County. I know Denise would agree. We've got a lot of work to be done there. And there are other places out there. I understand we have a photographer pretty much on staff, Steve, who could actually help us with being able to take pictures of some of the more atrocious situations that we have out there. That being, a picture is worth 1,000 words.
No, so interesting. Yeah. Interesting you mentioned that. I just two or three for the next time we have that 10 minutes, Tino.
Well, I'm sorry, Steve. Say that again.
No, I understand what you're saying.
And yeah.
I actually started the process a short while ago, realizing that sometimes words by themselves don't do the issue justice. Right.
Specific capability, Steve, that would be hugely helpful. But
I feel flattered already without having done it yet.
Tino, yeah, thank you, Tino.
You're welcome. Anu, you know the order in which the hands went up. Would you?
Yes. So we have Phil Posner. Steve, not sure if you have any additional comments, and then Doris Ray. And we are at 5:19.
This is Phil. I'll be quick. I just wanted to update you. The special board meeting this Thursday will be to get a presentation and to request authorization from the board of directors to hold a public hearing on the, listen to this, draft strategic transformation plan for regional input and comment. The strategic plan defines Metro's priorities and connects the mission, vision, and goals with actionable initiatives that will drive progress. Metrics and targets have been identified and laid out to measure progress against the plan. This will enhance transparency and build trust with Metro's customers and stakeholders. The plan was developed by the board of directors and management through direct and active input from customers, staff, and stakeholders. So this is the next 5 years of what they think they can do. So if the disability community has anything they think they would like done, they need to show up at the hearings. Because if you're not there, it ain't going to happen. Thank you.
Could I ask Tino a question with respect to that? Anu, is this the plan that we received a briefing on last month from Kimberly, or is this more of the nuts and bolts of what we're going to hear in February at the AAC meeting, sort of the metrics for the performance key indicators?
Thank you, Pat. This is Anu. What Dr. Posner just referred to was the presentation we received from Kimberly.
Okay, good. But the other presentation that we will receive next month at the AAC ties into the strategic plan.
That is about
somewhat.
That's a different topic, and
right.
I can get that confirmation at a later date. We don't have a confirmation at this point.
Okay, good.
This is Ms. Rush. I want to know: are we supposed to be there Thursday?
Not this Thursday.
Okay, thank you.
The following Thursday is the real board meeting. This is a special board meeting.
Thank you.
On the 26th, Ms. Rush.
Thank you.
So you're welcome.
Doris? Doris?
Yeah, me too, after Doris.
Is Doris still there?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. Dora seems to be having some trouble today. Seems Steve, like the connection may not be.
Sure, Steve, quickly.
I'd like to add customer service responses or responsiveness to customers' queries. I guess you might call it customer service. We've had in the past the person who oversees the department, but I don't think we've had the people who actually do or not do the responses to customers. But my feedback is they're not getting responses to queries. I don't know how you phrase that or who you get, but that seems to be a fairly big issue from the people I've talked to. So you might want to call it customer service response, whatever. But you know what I'm talking. You know what I'm talking about, I think.
You've mentioned it a couple of times in different meetings. Yeah. And knew if you could figure it out and identify who could speak to that issue, we should try and have that person at a future meeting, an upcoming meeting. Is Doris still there? If not, Pat, is your hand still up? No. With no other people wishing to comment, then let's move on then to the next item, the Hettinger Award. Anu?
Okay. All right. as everybody knows and remembers that we went through the nomination process for the 2022 Hettinger Award. Last Friday was the deadline to submit votes from the AAC members. And I'm happy to share the results. We received 11 members votes, one abstained, and the two nominees were Jim Hamry and our own Chair Calabia, Tino Calabia. The breakdown of the 10 votes, the 11th was abstention. The breakdown of the 10 votes that went one way or the other is as follows. We received 7 votes for Jim Hamry and 3 votes for Tino Calabia. And that pretty much concludes my report on the voting process and the results.
Thank you.
Sure. And just to add a little bit more, Chair Calabia, apologies. But as we had discussed at prior meetings, the tentative date was February 6th, AAC meeting for the Hettinger Award virtual ceremony. It would be great for us to get a confirmation so that I can start working on preparations accordingly. So I'm basically asking a confirmation from the committee for that date.
Well, that's an AAC meeting, but I have no objections. We should move to have the award made on that date at the AAC meeting.
Patrick just raised his hand. Patrick, please go ahead.
Thank you. Anu, thank you for this report. And I just want to congratulate both candidates. Steve, such a terrific report. Nomination for Tino. Tino, a very strong candidate and well-deserving. So you better be up there next year, okay?
thank you. But I'm still pressing for Tammy Duckworth.
Well, I don't know. I think you... She might have a run. You might have a run at her, you know. Strong candidate, sir.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you, Tino. Steve.
Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome, Patrick. Congratulations, Tina.
Ms. Rush, you just raised your hand. Go ahead, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We have a lot of things going on with the hearings, getting ready to come up. I think that February is kind of close to get everything ready for the Hettinger Award, maybe March. But Anu, you know what you have to do to get it ordered and printed and stuff like that. And you also need to check with the candidate to see if February, the person who's going to receive it, if February, because it's so close.
Sure. And thank you. That's great thoughts, great comments, Ms. Rush. I actually was going to start my email process today after the meeting ended to... order the awards and contacting the nominee or the candidate, the nominee at this point. So,
thank you.
However, if there is no conflict for the hearing process, and if everything else falls in place, would the committee still prefer the March date, or would the committee prefer February date? Or I can also do this. I can follow up, try to get some information about the hearing dates sometime this week, if possible, and I can share that with the committee, and accordingly, the committee can discuss it further.
Well, Patrick, the February date would be the AAC meeting. So what's your thought?
I'm thinking that it's what you just said. I knew it was a good idea. I think we could find the dates out. I thought John Pasek was saying that the hearing was going to be the end of February, beginning of March. Phil, do you remember that from the RAC meeting? I think that's what we were looking at, which really would give us enough time, I think, to get this done in February. But I knew rather than make a decision, you know, at this meeting, why don't we, you know, if you want to investigate, John seemed to have some pretty good info on that. I'm just guessing. I think it was the end of February, beginning of March, that they were going to have the hearings.
That is also what I'm recalling. But like I said, I can definitely.
Yeah. So, I think why not? And particularly since we have we don't have, you know, as many people here, why don't we get the facts and then send it out and we can make a decision quickly on email. But don't give us too much time.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thanks. I will try to send the email as quickly as I can.
Fair enough. Yeah. Is that good, Tina?
Yeah, works for me.
Good.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. So we are pretty much on time at this point. Wonderful. Next would be ombudsman report. Barbara, if you have any report to share, please come off of mute.
Yes, good evening, afternoon. This is Barbara. Tonight, I would like to talk about rail announcements. And that would be, for example, when you're on the train, you hear the rail line that you're on and the final destination of that line, as well as the station ahead. So, I'm talking about the audio and visual announcements, and also inside and outside the cars. So pretty much everything. And so we know how really important it is for you to have clear and accurate information when you're on the train or about to get on the train. We would like to thank you very much for your feedback and keep it coming. We are looking at resolving these issues, and we're also looking into the same thing for the buses. So I'll give you a little hint of what's going on, but we're not really quite sure yet exactly all of the things, but it does have to do with computers and software, and please stay tuned. We haven't forgotten you about this issue. We'll have some more information as it becomes available.
Barbara, the AAC handbook on train design dealt with announcements on the trains, and in fact, recommendations made then have been adopted to our satisfaction. on the other hand, the question about lighting at stations, which has been your baby since, I don't know, 10, 15 years back, that's still a pressing issue. And we need you to continue working on that and updating us on that. I don't recall if I've shared what homework that Sandy Newfield and Doris have done regarding lighting issues. I had earlier circulated the fact that apparently WMATA has put out an RFP for consultants in terms of lighting. And based on that, both Sandy and Doris made some suggestions. In fact, I'm going to ask Anu if she could pass on those suggestions to whoever deals with RFPs. So we don't, any benefits in their homework can be shared now rather than be referred to after the RFPs have been decided. But Barbara, you were so key in bringing some order to the question of lighting, especially in the stations. We need you to continue that. And Doris and Sandy are right there with us in this regard in the coming year. What's your thoughts on the status of lighting at the moment in stations?
Tino, rest assured that I can multitask and do these bus and rail stop announcements and also take care of the lighting as best as possible. We have very strong disability community support on the lighting, and I am not the only one who is championing this. So just hang in there. We actually had a meeting about it today. So you're right on point, and thank you so much for caring.
Yes. With whom did you meet? And then Patrick.
Internal meeting. And we don't really have anything to share at this point, but we are very well aware of what the committee's concerns are.
Okay. Patrick.
Go ahead. Yes.
Sorry, Patrick.
No.
But Vanessa raised her hand before you did. So Vanessa, go ahead, and then Patrick.
Ladies before gentlemen. All right.
Vanessa. You're muted, Vanessa. Does she know she's muted?
Vanessa, you raised your hand, but if you're speaking, we cannot hear you. So you would have to unmute yourself. Okay, Patrick.
All right. Thank you, Anu. Vanessa, if you jump in, I'll stop. Had some question about signage within the metro system. Just curious about the standards that we follow as far as signage is concerned. Maybe that might be a Carol question or whatever. Is it, does it fall under ADA, or what gives us, you know, as far as contrast, size, height, all that, where does that fall? Where are the regulations for that?
Hi, Patrick, thank you for asking that question. The ADA standards for transportation have a very explicit standard for signage and contrast.
Okay.
And
I guess I need to review those. Okay, thank you.
And their communications. And we also, whenever we do digital signage, we also comply with, we exceed WCAG standards.
Mm-hmm. For signage?
Yes.
Okay, you mean as far as
if they're digital, for example,
digital, right.
Our PID signs, our contrast is way above what the WCAG standard.
4.5, right? Yeah. Okay, yeah, got you on that. And where would I find the other piece of as far as signage that's under ADA?
I will send you a link in a minute.
Great.
Can I email that to you? It's on ADA standards for transportation, but I will send it to you.
I'd love a link. Great. All okay. Right. Thank you for that. Yes.
I see Doris's hand is still up.
This is Vanessa. I'm sorry. The system was not allowing me to unmute, so I had to dial in by phone. So thank you. So I just wanted to ask, with the audio and the visual alerts that you're having, I don't know, it seemed like I remember asking, was this option going to also be on the cell phones to notify you when a train is in the area or whatever is you're getting through the audio and the visual? Will it be available on the iPhones?
Yes, there are. Oh, this is Barbara. There are apps out there that do alert you of those things. They're not currently Metro apps, however. So we really can't comment too much on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Calabria, this is, I just want to state this. Doris had come off of mute. She has her hand raised, but I believe she's continuing to have some glitches or technical issues, and we cannot hear her. So
please don't talk for me.
Okay, Doris, yes, we can hear you now. Doris?
Okay. Actually, Tino, I had my hand raised for a different conversation. So that's just fine. And I appreciate you acknowledging it, though. But what I do want to add is that I think one of the issues that Sandy and I brought up that was looming high is this issue of some of the lighting that they're beginning to use in the station and or proposing to use, Barbara, is high intensity white lighting. And that's what I gleaned from the presentation that we have, and that is something that's going to cause a lot of glare, you know, like the lighting that's on the escalators, the new lighting that was put on the escalators. So
yep.
The question was, if that's what they're going to use in the stations, then problematic.
We are evaluating that, and we are, for everyone, people who are very sensitive to light and very sensitive to dark.
Yeah, right. So different people see different things. And the only other thing I wanted to mention was with regard to that I didn't get to because of my mic going on and off, is that with regard to the bus stops and the localities, you know, that and the floating bus stops is a regional issue, and perhaps we could get the AFA to work on that because all of the local governments, you know, participate in COG and the AFA for transportation issues. Thanks.
Yeah, we are looking at Metro buses primarily, because we're WMATA, right? But we are also at the same time looking at some Fairfax connectors and some ride-on buses, just so we can kind of compare to see how we do versus the other buses.
Yeah, bus lines. I mean, just the pedestrian infrastructure and the bus stops are...
Thank you for your comments, Doris. Fully noted.
Sandy, you still have your hand up?
Yes, this is Sandy. I just want a clarification about that RFP that you passed around. I thought that was external lighting on the bridge itself, just for an aesthetic thing. Is that internal to a station and I misread something?
Well, maybe I misread it, but I thought it had some bearing on what happens also in stations. Sorry.
Perhaps there's someone here on the call from WMATA that could address. There's an RFP out there for the Yellow Line Bridge that's under renovation for lighting.
Okay. This is Carol Lopez. If it has to do with the bridge, it's not going to be about internal lighting.
Okay, that's what I thought from, okay, thank you.
Well, in any event, let's see, Doris, you mentioned some sources that have been studying the question we originally talked about, that is lighting in terms of glare and how to reduce glare or eliminate glare. if you think those searches would be helpful, let's share them with Barbara. And if we can get some clarification on what the RFP was for, and if it is for stations, then we should share the homework that you and Sandy had done with whoever is dealing with the RFP.
I'll look into it and have a report next month. How does that sound?
Sure. Great.
Okay. Hey, Chair Kalahari, this is Anand. We are at 5:45, time is for public comments section. If any of the members of the public have any comments, you can tell us your name or raise your virtual hands and we will take your comments in the order received. Earlier in the meeting, Rico Dancy had stated he would like to make some comments during public comments, but I believe he is not connected any longer. So we will have to take Rico's comments via email if he wishes to send us later. Janice Samuel just raised hand. So Janice, when you start speaking, I would turn the timer for 3 minutes at that time. I would try and give you a 30-second heads up. I don't like to interrupt, but I would try to find time. But if I'm unable to do so, you will hear sound at the end of 3 minutes. So when you start speaking, the timer will start.
Thank you, Anu. I'll be brief. Can you please repeat the information for the hearing that you suggested the visually impaired attend? Date, time, location.
Tina?
Yes, Pat.
Are we talking about the public hearings for the in front of the board?
I'm not sure what Janice Samuel is speaking about.
Well, Janice, the only thing that if those were the hearings that we're talking about, this is Pat Sheehan. Then we were looking at what I heard was the end of February, beginning of March for the hearings that deal with fares and schedules for upcoming changes.
So while ago, one of the speakers strongly stated that there were items that the disability community wanted to have changed, they need to show up en masse at a hearing. So I wanted to know when, where, and the time and location and of that hearing.
This is Zenu. I believe Janice Samuel might be referring to comments made by Dr. Posner.
Mm-hmm. This is Ms. Rush. It hasn't, hearings have not been set. They haven't been announced. We know that we are expecting them to be announced soon, and it's going to be the end of February, probably the beginning of March. But they have not been set in stone as of yet.
Right. Okay. I thought someone mentioned a Thursday that was coming up.
Yeah, that was next Thursday, I believe. And Phil said there was going to be a presentation based on the strategic plan, WMATA's strategic plan going forward. It was a brief that we had received last month regarding the 5-year strategic plan. And I think Phil wanted to indicate that we should be aware of what that plan is going to be, and make sure that the needs of the disabled community were going to be part of that plan going forward. What we saw from Kimberly, and I forget her last name, Feldpower, I think, was fairly high level. We will get more information on that as you know, we're going forward throughout the year. But I think that you could catch that. It would be on YouTube, right, Anu? as far as
yes, yes, right. We, if you do check our website, which is wmata.com, you would be able to go to our YouTube channel and watch the presentation online.
And the presentation that Kimberly gave us last month on the same strategic plan is up.
That is also available under the documents and Janice, if you would like to send us an email, I would be happy to send you the links and the documents. I can share, I can provide you with the email address if you're able to make a note of that.
I'm ready to copy.
Okay, so the email address is access@vmata.com. That's access@wmata.com.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Steve just raised his hand. Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. Tino, you know, in thinking about some of the subjects that we might include during the year, one came up that I was going to make a comment on, but I think it's better to have it as a presentation or discussion point, and that's the coordination of WMATA and DDOT, specifically as it relates to, you know, clearing the road effectively for metro buses. Planning islands as far as location and size and how they could work for both parties. And also coordinating which kind of bus may work best. For example, what comes to mind is the number 42 bus, which I've talked about before. It's the main Connecticut Avenue bus, is now being detoured to Kennedy Center. And since this is a pretty much a 20-hour bus, that means at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's now going to Kennedy Center, that part of that bus might best be done by a circulator. And so there are also two major buses. They're out of town buses that block the right lanes of Massachusetts Avenue and Connecticut Avenue. They cause all the traffic to move leftward, including the N buses, which a substantial number of seniors use in getting into town, and the 42 bus from Connecticut Avenue. So, I'm not specifics, but the question, do they interact? Do they meet? How do they interact? And how do they resolve issues to the satisfaction of both parties, DDOT and WMATA, specifically as it relates to buses?
Well, that's a big one. It may be that Heidi Case's advisory committee would be germane to this discussion. I don't know how we would affect the private express buses that use DuPont Circle as one of their terminals. I'm not sure how we would deal with that. And I think you mentioned those two express buses. With regard to the 42, we've heard a number of times about that from you. And obviously, you haven't got a satisfactory response yet. I'm not sure whom we could go to get that corrected.
You're absolutely right in the question you raised. I'm thinking more of how they coordinate. For example, about four or five years ago, those two out-of-town buses were placed in those locations. And I believe it had to be with approval of DDOT. they could have been placed off street in other streets as they had previously been. DDOT may not have realized the effect that this has had by, in effect, blocking the right lanes into, you know, one of the major circles, but it certainly affects the flow of the buses. And so I guess my question is, do they coordinate with each other? Are they very separate? Do they meet periodically to discuss common issues? It's more of a question than making, you know, making a statement. And maybe it's not even for us to deal with.
I think it's the latter. It may not deal with these are commercial buses that must negotiate with the District of Columbia. Anyone else have some thoughts about that? If not, Steve, I'm not sure we can do anything about. Yes,
Tina, this is Ms. Rush. The AAC committee cannot tell the bus WMATA, or it's really not our concern how they, we want them to do the bus lines certain ways, but I don't think there's any way that we can change that. Or you can testify at a hearing about the bus line that you're concerned about, but that's not, I don't think that the AAC committee can affect that. That's not something we can do anything about.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thanks. I understand what you're saying. Thanks. Thanks, okay. Ms. Rush. Sure.
If there are no other comments, Doris, you have your hand up again. Doris. Doris has her hand up and she's unmuted. Is there some technical problem, do you think, Anu?
Seems that way, Chair Calabria.
Well, maybe Doris, if you can hear us, you can email your comment. excuse me. But for now, if there are no other...
Yes, some static.
Yeah, that may be Doris's static. In any event, I have 5:58 p.m. If Doris can't get through to us, or if there is no one else who has a comment either by the committee or by the public, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I'll move that it's time to adjourn. This is Sandy.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second, Tito.
Okay, hearing no objections, at 5:58, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you one and all. And again, happy 2023 to everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank
good
you.
Goodbye. Good health, Tino.